Great, thank you. I will call to meeting, to order this meeting. Let's try this again. The House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee. Obviously, we're pushing just a little today. I apologize for the delay. Can't control those floor sessions now, can I? So we'll all just kind of slow down and take a deep breath. Before I open the public hearing for the committee, I have here the letter that we agreed that we would send with regard to the emergency declaration for the Port of Newport's International Terminal, and I believe there is a special pen being passed around with it for your signature. So we'll do that, and then you will all get PDF copies of this letter. So just a little committee business to take care of here, and I will now open a public hearing, our first public hearing and possible work session on HJM 4. Mr. Willis, and are any of the rest of the team coming up with you?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair, are we on House Bill 2176?
We are on HJM 4.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, professional staff, my name is Jim Willis. I'm Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of HJM 4, which is a memorial urging Congress to establish a 90-day soft landing for returning National Guard soldiers. The Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services reviewed the current reintegration efforts when National Guard soldiers returned to Oregon from combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. The result was disturbing. While the Army will take 90 to 120 days to train a National Guardsman for war by putting them on active duty orders, which is Title 10, the Army allows less than 2 weeks for the soldier to leave combat and return to his or her civilian life after combat. The result has been unemployment, divorce, alcohol and substance abuse, and even suicide. Oregon is a national leader in National Guard reintegration. The first of its kind, Oregon's model has been copied by states throughout the nation. However, from the beginning, everyone associated with reintegration recognized that more time was needed for soldiers to decompress and to be assessed for medical, emotional, and mental conditions. Once home from overseas, guardsmen are subjected to, and I quote here, death by PowerPoint. Briefings from every agency that offers them service. I've personally been a part of these briefings, and I can tell you that these troops just want to go home to their families and are not interested in what we have to say at that time. Trying to provide information about health care, insurance, VA benefits, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, education, and more over a four-day period, and more some 4 days after they've been kicking down doors in Iraq or Afghanistan is a non-starter. It simply doesn't work. First, and yet, that's what we are all forced to do because these soldiers no longer are on active duty orders and need to be sent home. So what we are doing in our state is proposing not only this joint memorial, but working with our congressional delegation. And in this particular case, Senator Wyden's office has agreed to take this on at the congressional level. This is a long time coming. I believe this effort will be seen as needed across the nation. All states that are using National Guard troops see this as a serious issue and one where we need to spend some time decompressing these soldiers and reintegrating them into their families, back to their jobs, or back to their full-time education from whence they came before they were called up on active duty. That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone may have. And I don't want to put him on the spot, but I noticed General Caldwell is here. He's had a lot of experience with this, and he might want to join me and help me answer the questions that you may have.
I would not be a bit surprised. General Caldwell, would you like to make any comments before I open it for questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Oregon Military Department Deputy Director. I will echo what Director Willis has indicated with respect to this joint memorial, and I will tell you that just before I came down here, I was sending information to Senator Wyden's staff as they're trying to craft a very similar act for the Congress. So I think this is very timely. It fits, I think, exactly what we've experienced over the last 7 years. Best example I can give you was that we had initially our first major deployment. Actually, it was our second one. 2nd Battalion, 167, 2nd Infantry, headquartered in Eugene. You may recall that was right during the height of the Iraqi war, a lot of conflict. 9 members of that organization were killed in combat. So the unit had some significant combat and issues associated with those. We knew when they left that about, it was during the 2001-2002 economic downturn, which seems like a light years away compared to the one we're in now, but we knew that about 60% of those soldiers had departed Oregon without a job. They were either in school or unemployed for one reason or another. So we recognized that we needed to do something that was really kind of the start point of the reintegration team, because several of their members had come back wounded, and we, in interviewing them, had figured out that we got some serious issues we got to learn how to deal with. We were very good at getting people out the front door. We just simply hadn't given a lot of thought to them coming home. That was really when we started reintegration. Part of that effort was to get these kids employed, these young men and women, actually only a couple of females, but we wanted to get them a job. So we put together a job fair here in Salem at the Anderson Readiness Center out here in State Street. It was opened less than a year at that point. We had a tremendous response from employers. I mean, it was just really gratifying to see the number of employers that showed up at that event. And each and every one of them told us that they would hire on the spot if they had, you know, even limited qualified candidates, because they knew that if they hired soldiers, guardsmen, that even if they didn't have the skills, they said, we can teach them the skills because they'll show up, they'll work on time. They don't take a mental health day, the third day of work. And they show up and work 8 hours, and then we can rely on them, and they know how to be there in the right uniform and the right equipment and everything else. Out of the almost 400 people that were unemployed, at the end of the evening, I went around and pulled all the employers together and brought them together and said, well, how did we do? And they said, well, we passed out a lot of information. I said, did you hire anybody? And they said, not a one. And so we were sitting there going, my God, we got 400 kids that we ran through here, all unemployed, all good family wage jobs that were being offered, and not a single person took an offer that they would have offered them on the spot. So we sat back and said, what are we doing wrong? Something's not working here. What did we do wrong? Something just flat just isn't working. After talking to the soldiers again, getting these group back together, several members of them, little cohorts, we realized that they simply are not ready. They were just, as Jim indicated, you know, 7-8 days earlier, they were getting shot at. They were literally getting shot at 7 to 10 days before that, suddenly coming home and all of a sudden say, now take a job. They couldn't adjust. They couldn't get that. They couldn't make that transition that quickly. So we re-engineered how we do business now. We don't do the job fairs when they come home. We wait 60, 90 days, try to perform the job fair then. We've had better success. Nevertheless, and I think his testimony is absolutely 100% accurate, we cannot bring these kids back from a war zone that quickly, transition them into civilian life, and say, gee, you have a nice life. We'll see you in 30 days for a drill. There are a few that can actually do that, but typically those are the ones that we've recognized that weren't necessarily in the real heat of things either. Maybe they were back behind the other guys. Maybe they were pushing paper as opposed to being out and getting shot at. So there are those folks that can do that, and it doesn't seem to bother them. But that's a small percentage. We've asked our delegation over the last several years to come up with this type of activity. We believe it's the responsibility of the federal government, not the state government, to support them. They typically have about 2 weeks leave when they get home. So out of that 90 days, 2 weeks is already owed by the federal government. They usually pay that off in a lump sum when they depart active duty and come back to the control of the governor. And what we're suggesting is that they're still in what Jim termed Title 10, U.S. Code Title 10, so they still belong to the federal government, because the other issue we found is that they won't tell the truth when they go through these assessments at Fort Lewis or wherever they deploy from. They want to go home, and they know that if they say, listen, my back's hurting or my knee's hurting or I've got this wrong or that wrong, they know that's a ticket to stay at Fort Lewis when all their buddies go home and their families are home, or Fort wherever they are, Fort Hood, Fort Carson, you name it. And that means they're not going to see mom and the kids. So they will lie about it. They just ignore it. Then they come back into our care, and suddenly we either got to go to the VA or we try to get them back into the Army medical system, and it becomes problematic. So if we had them home and had 90 days to work with them, we know for a fact then we could identify those things that need to be taken care of, and it's a lot easier for us to get them fixed by the Army than it is to work through the VA. Much quicker, much easier, and it would work a lot better. And in defense of the Army, they have actually come up with a program at basically our insistence about 6 years ago, saying, why can't you do the rehab for some of these injuries at home? Why do we have to send them off to Never Never Land and keep them away from their families? And they did come up with a community-based health care program, which now we're doing. Still, though, if you say, I've got a problem, you've got to stay wherever your deployment station was until that's assessed, and then you can get back to home and get that treatment. But so there's that delay. So this is a very good resolution for this body to take on, I think, right now. I think it's timely. I think it's long overdue, actually. And I think it would be well if the legislature showed their support to our delegation so they can continue to push this with the federal government and the Department of Defense. And I'll answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Is there any questions for these two gentlemen? Rep. Boone.
I'll just say thank you for doing that program. I had a constituent who fell into that situation and was basically kept away from home for over a year, and his family had to travel to see him. And they're not wealthy people, put it that way. They had a hard time doing that. And this is so much better.
Thank you.
Thank you. We do have two other individuals who I believe would like to testify on this one. And we have had good background on this when we heard the task force report. I know, spent a lot of time on this issue. I have Donovan Boyd and Reverend Robert Bibbles?
Biggs,
I'm sorry. My apologies for misreading that. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for allowing us to. This is very important to us as old veterans of the Korean War.
Appreciate that.
I'm a chaplain from that duty, and first I'll let Don Boyd speak.
As you begin your testimony,
Madam Chair,
if you'd introduce yourself.
My name is Donovan Boyd. I'm the master of Russellville Grange, 353 Portland, Oregon. And I was going through this joint resolution last night, and it kind of caught my eye. And the gentlemen before us, they pretty much said a lot what I said, but I do believe and firmly believe that the soldiers coming home from the Guard and the Reserves should come back to their home state and be indoctrinated here. The service doesn't give you very much in a way of helping you out when you leave the service. I know when I left during the Korean conflict, they said goodbye, and that was it. And I think that's true for a lot of people. When this bill passes, if it passes, I believe during the indoctrination it would be important that they include the family of the veteran coming home for their information on what to expect from these guys. They're going to show different symptoms a lot, and they don't know what's going on. They're going to be drinking, they're going to be carrying on, and they're just going to be irrational, and they won't know what's causing it. And if they get that explained to them on the family level, the wives, the husbands, or the parents, at least they'll know what to watch for and get better care. And that's about it. I know from World War II and the Korean veterans like Bob and myself, we had no idea what was bothering us for 50 years. And when we finally got to the doctors, they said that we were stressed out. That was it. Bob?
Yes.
I'm retired Chaplain Robert Biggs, Korean War, being discharged there in 1954. It seems forever, but anyway, I'm pushing 80 and have had a lot of experience with some of the issues that are involved in this outstanding resolution. I'm here to make a few comments. Dawn is certainly right about those of us who came back from Korean War. I was a top scholar and an activist as a student at Walport at Hyatt Schools and in Yahats, and I came back, and had it not been for the Grange and for the Masonic Lodge, I would have been ignored completely. I knew something was wrong in here. And I had a foster family that brought me to Portland to go to the VA to talk about my problems because they said, Bobby, you're just not the same boy anymore. And the terrible problems of post-trauma was there. But at that time, excuse me, there was no help for that. It was pushed out, and next thing, many, even though I succeeded very well down the road, I become involved in alcohol. It was my medicine. We don't want this for these men coming back now. And my experience as a chaplain, and I am retired and a little bit retarded, as I jokingly say, but I still get a lot of calls from the families of Oregon who say, my son isn't right. I wonder if you can talk. And our organization, the Oregon Washington Veterans Action Committee, which we started some years ago and approached Mr. Willis and others and told them what we were doing, we were taking care of those things the best we can to try to get help, particularly the benefits and all for these men. It's very, very hard to get through the process. So it's about time now that we don't go the old thing that happened in the Korean War time and the other wars since then, that we get going with this, and particularly letting our men have the help immediately. I was on a negotiating team in the Korean War, and we had to try to talk to those men coming back. They were hiding the truth. They're doing that now. I talked to these guys individually and their families. They don't want to tell, and they certainly don't want to tell the officers and the people processing them out. They don't want to tell the whole truth. They've got to have more time to work this out. Dr. Sardo, one of the most outstanding post-trauma men that we have in Oregon now, has a program in Vancouver. I attend that quite often along with Dawn. We hear these stories, and believe me, we know what we're talking about. We need your help and the help of the Oregonians to push this through. I think that's enough said. Don Kidson said, well, you talk quite a bit. I said, you know, a preacher don't talk a little bit. He does get 10 cents at the pot. So I've said all I can say now.
Thank you very much for taking your time to come today. And I congratulate a Walport High School graduate.
Thank you.
That's my district. Thank you there, sir.
I know of you, Representative Cohen. Thank you.
Any questions for these gentlemen? Thank
you. A comment. And thank you for coming, and thank you for what you're doing now, after the fact, for it to help the next generation.
And thank you. And this is going to be a great session, and thank all of you. I know of many of you, and you've seen much of me.
Okay.
God bless.
All right. Thank you very much. I am going to close the public hearing on HJM 4 and open a public hearing on HJM 2. And then I will let the committee know it is my intention to move to a work session if I don't hear any objection for these two after we hear HJM 2. Mr. Willis, you look like you're ready on this one, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Oops, sorry about that microphone. Thanks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, professional staff, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of House Joint Measure 2, or Memorial 2, which is a memorial urging Congress to fund the local veterans employment representative, which is called a LEVER, and the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program, which is called DVOP. The Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services agreed that veteran employment and workforce issues are a high priority for the state. These levers and DVOPs play a pitiful role, or excuse me, pivotal.
Pivotal, oh, yes, please.
pivotal role in helping veterans and disabled veterans prepare for and obtain employment in Oregon. However, the task force learned that these two programs have suffered significant budget cuts within the United States Department of Labor, resulting in the loss of services to Oregon veterans. With between 300 and 500 veterans returning to Oregon each month, the current staff of leavers and DevOps cannot meet the demand as currently staffed. Oregon needs more leavers and DevOps to help veterans find and maintain employment after service, especially in this economy. Employing veterans in return for their service to our nation is not only the right thing to do, but it strengthens our economy. This memorial urges Congress to establish a nationwide public works program in conjunction with state employment departments and military authorities to provide jobs for veterans after service. The Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services sees this as a win-win for the state in that public works projects will be completed in the state with federal dollars and veterans will be hired and be employed. Lastly, this memorial asks Congress to provide tax credit to employers who hire veterans and businesses that retain veterans to incentivize the private sector to employ our veterans. Importantly, this memorial has been shared with the Oregon Congressional Delegation, which is working on federal legislation in support of these issues. HJM 2 is not just a feel-good memorial. It is a policy statement by the state that our congressional delegation can use to pass this important legislation. I'm very pleased to report to you that the congressional offices of both Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Schrader have agreed to take this on. And if you see a common thread working through these memorials, that they've been divided up among our congressional delegation, then you are correct, and you will hear more as we testify later in other memorials as to which of the congressional offices have agreed to take these things on. And I like that because it means that we actually can get something done in the Congress that then ties itself back to our state. I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone may have, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any specific questions? I think it's just important to note I can't highlight enough your comments about the fact that we have our congressional delegation standing ready to move forward with some important legislation at the national level. I am not a supporter of feel-good joint memorials.
Great.
That we all can say, great, we said we felt this way, and then we all go home, and that's a nice thing to have done. I do support working through the proposals that are before us as long as you tell us that there's actually going to be some action on the other end. So I thank you for doing that preliminary work.
Well, Madam Chair, let me just strengthen what you just said in two more ways. One is that I've already seen draft legislation for some of these issues we brought before you, and none of the memorials we will bring to this committee are feel-good memorials, and we will tie a congressional office with each of them. And secondly, the latter part of this month, I'm going to Washington, D.C. in person with some of my fellow directors from the Western United States to ensure that we get these things docketed and that there is appropriate debate on these issues. And to the extent we can tie some stimulus monies to this, both at the state and federal level, the more successful I think we can become.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Representative Cohn.
Thank you, Chair. And this is for the committee or Mr. Willis, either one, but on line 19 it adds the component beyond earlier in the measure that we want increased funding for employment, but it provides tax credits for employers. Is it wise to put both components in the resolution, or does it really matter?
It doesn't matter to us, Representative Comp and Madam Chair. If you believe that we need to bring a separate document to this body for the tax credits, we certainly are happy to look at that. But at this point, it doesn't bother us.
It certainly wouldn't stop me from voting on this today, but It's okay. Just a consideration maybe in the future.
I guess, then I'll get to you. The thought process off the top of my head, and we're not in work session yet, but because this is a memorial asking of some action of our congressional delegation, then that would certainly, if I'm not incorrect, would that not leave it up to them to do two different bills at the congressional level if they felt it was best?
That is, Madam Chair, that's how I would understand it be done.
Okay. So we could kind of leave that. Representative
Boone? Thank you, Madam Chair. That kind of answers my question, too. I was going to ask if the tax credit, if you have any more information of what it would be, and is there an adjoining state tax credit already enacted or to be enacted that would make it this a really good package?
There is not, to my knowledge, an adjoining state tax credit. This is asking for a federal tax credit. It's certainly not something that we would be against looking at.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to look at the economic climate that we're in right now and see what would be best for businesses and help them out in terms of employing these veterans.
So follow up. Do you have a number or a percentage or something, so what the tax credit might be?
I don't.
Okay.
Representative Boone, no. And the reason for that is because when we propose these things, they will take it to the Joint Tax Committee and their council will look at it, and the proposal will come from the congressional office that's carrying this. They will usually tell us ahead of time what they have in mind, and then we'd be happy to report back to the committee what we learned. But I don't know the answer to that today.
Thank you. We could pursue that a thought at a later date.
Yes,
if you see fit. I think we should be very careful to separate state action and federal action at this point. And this memorial is aimed specifically at asking for federal action.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
We have a couple of other folks who would like to testify on this. Jim Booker and Bob, is it Caldwell or Caldrell?
Madam Chairman, I decline because I have been mixed up on the bill. Excuse me.
Okay. I'm sorry. It didn't look like the same name to me. So, anyone else who would like to testify on this particular memorial, please come forward.
Good afternoon, hello. Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jim Booker from the Oregon Employment Department. I am the Veterans Program Coordinator for the department. I'm a member of the Governor's Task Force on Veterans Services, and I'm also a veteran, and I'm one of the pitiful leavers that Mr. Willis talked about.
Yeah, you did. Here, sorry.
I'd like to.
Fortunately, we got you elevated slightly.
I really appreciate that.
Certainly, sir.
I'd like to just talk to you a little bit about what the local veterans employment representatives and the Disabled Veteran Outreach Program staff do so that you get an idea of why this is such a good idea to give us some more money to fund our programs. Right now, this is a very critical time in Oregon and across the nation for veterans because of the economic problems that we're having, as well as the continued war going on and people coming back from that, the veterans having to deal with the issues of returning and making that transition from military life to civilian life. In Oregon, we don't have any active duty bases, and so we don't have some of the amenities that you have, like base exchanges and commissaries and hospitals. And so we need to make do with what we have. And we have a fine Veterans Administration hospital here, and that's really good. But there are other issues that need addressing. One of the things, of course, one of the most important in that transition from military life to civilian life is getting a job. It's very important to that returning to normal feeling. I'm going to refer to local veterans employment representatives and disabled veterans outreach program staff as veterans representatives to make it a little bit easier instead of having to say those long words each time. Some of the things that we do, we are veterans. Every single one of us who are employed in this position are veterans who have been specially trained to help veterans find work. We go through a very good training process at the National Veterans Training Institute in Denver, Colorado, that includes how to overcome significant barriers to employment for veterans, various labor exchange services that are available to them, different resources that we can access to help veterans as they overcome these barriers to employment. We're also there to help them navigate the system. Anytime you get involved in the quote-unquote government, sometimes it can feel overwhelming, and it's really nice to know that you've got a friend or an advocate to help you out, and that's what we do. We connect with veterans, again, because we are veterans. Another thing is that we are living in the communities, and we know our communities very well. So if a particular need arises, we're able to refer those veterans to the things that they need. We have many services that we offer that are really outstanding. For example, resume writing. We're able to help them with resume writing. A very important piece is being able to translate your military skills to civilian skills. And that's one that isn't always easy. For some, they come to us and say, well, I was an infantryman, and all I knew how to do was march and carry a rifle. But they don't realize that they have leadership skills and other things that they can use to make themselves more readily hireable to an employer in the civilian world. Another thing is considering their rank structure. Just the fact that you moved up in the military is like moving up in an organization, and you had increasing leadership skills and to take advantage of those. We also bring resources like IMAT Skills, which is a very powerful, let's call it kind of job application on steroids. You come in and you put in your work history, your education history, you put down the different skills you got for each of the different jobs you have, and the program actually matches your skills to the skills that employers bring in as they put their jobs in for when they're looking for employees. It's a very wonderful system. We have the qualityinformation.org system. That's a labor market information. What that does for you is, especially for veterans who come back, and many do, and decide, well, I might want to change my job, or I don't even know what I want to do. This is a way that they can explore careers and look at how much you can get paid in Monroe County versus Multnomah County. What type of licensing do I need? Where can I get education to do this job? It's a terrific program that we use quite often. We also have the Transition Assistance Program classes, which are a 3-day intensive vet-focused job search class that we offer to veterans and their spouses to help them with everything from how do I organize my job search all the way up to how do I negotiate my pay. It's a wonderful class, and we've offered it in the past to the Oregon National Guard, and we're looking to expand that to the Army Reserves and Navy Reserves, who also could use that program. In cooperation with other agencies, we've been able to identify gaps in services that veterans needed, and with help from legislatures like yourself, we've been able to do things like get a transportation fund to help pay for transportation costs when veterans are looking for work that we found that sometimes they weren't able to do, and they needed that little extra help to get some gas or to get a bus pass to go look for a job. We were also able to help identify the fact that we needed a small business repair loan that ODVA administers. We've helped out with identifying the fact that an emergency fund was needed for both the Oregon Military Department and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. We worked with local agencies like Community Solutions for Clackamas County to get a federal grant, $750,000 a year, that we've had for the past 2.5 years, that pays for short-term training and for work boots, work clothing, things like that. It's been very successful and very helpful to us. But with all the good things that we do, one of the problems that we have is that the federal funding formula that provides the allocation for us to do our job focuses strictly on how many veterans are looking for work and registered in the unemployment system in Oregon versus the number of veterans looking for work and registered in the system in the U.S. as a whole. And because of declining numbers of veterans, World War II veterans, Korean veterans are getting out of the workforce, even Vietnam veterans are starting to get out of the workforce, the number of veterans that we're serving is going down. And in my testimony piece, I've shown you that we've been reduced because of that, 5% over the past 5 years. And when you couple that with an increasing operational cost that goes up every year, I mean, things just don't stop rising, as you know, pay and things like that. We've been actually had to reduce the force that we have, 18% in the disabled veteran outreach program staff and 45% in the local veteran employment representative staff. However, if you look at the second page, we're seeing more veterans per vet rep now. And I think that's going to increase quite a bit as we see the effects of the economy right now. Our anticipated workload will also increase because we have 3,500 veterans coming back from a deployment and estimated to come back in 2010, Oregon National Guard veterans. We know that we're also, as Jim Willis mentioned, seeing about 400 to 500 separation papers, DD-214s, coming per month to the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, which indicate that there's a potential for quite a few veterans to come back from the regular military, and we don't necessarily see them. We don't get to see them in a demobilization area because they do that wherever their unit is around the United States, whereas with the Oregon National Guard, they have us right there to make sure that we're able to let them know about their benefits. Aside from that, there are many things that we'd like to be able to do that we could do if we had more local veterans employment reps and disabled veteran outreach program staff. We do them now, but if you understand that we're stretched very, very thin, it makes it difficult. When you've had to cut back staff to maintain a geographical coverage of the state and so the staff is now a half-time veterans representative, it's tough for them to spend the time getting out of the office because they need to be there for the vets who do come in. With these extra funds, if they come in, we would be able to add the appropriate number of leavers and DVOPs to help enhance our services to veterans. We would continue to support the National Guard Yellow Ribbon Reintegration Program, reach out to the Army and Navy Reserves, continue to support the Oregon National Guard Family Program, which is one of the ways that we believe we're actually going to be able to get the information to the vet. Because even if the vet doesn't hear us at a demobilization, the spouse will. And they're very good about making sure that that vet knows that, hey, when you need to get a job, we know somebody who can help you out. So we really appreciate that connection. Also, we do participate in the job fairs that the Oregon National Guard puts on around the state. We'd also like to start getting out to local communities and having many veteran summits modeled on the veteran summit that the Oregon National Guard does to let the community know, you know, what kind of services are available, because I'm always surprised when I go to a community that some people don't know what services they actually have in their community, and it's nice to get them together so that they know. Identify the gaps, problem solve, and make sure that the veterans are taken care of. In short, passing this House Joint Memorial Number 2 would help veterans get jobs, and particularly if we could add to the DVOP and Lever staff. And that concludes my testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. This is a good piece of information for us to have. I appreciate the detail that you brought to us. Any questions, Ms. Jim?
In your list of things that you would do with the increased funding, you mentioned that, conduct the veterans stand down. And we've had a couple now in Clatsop County. They're very successful. They're a one-stop shop for the vets. And I was amazed at how well attended they were, and everybody stayed all day, all the presenters. I learned more than I've learned in a long time, even in this committee.
It's hard to understand. Okay. Thank you.
I hope you continue. I wish every county could have one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Boone.
If there are no further questions, I will close the public hearing on HJM 2. Are there any objections on the committee to moving to work session on these two items?
We should.
Okay. With that, then, I will open a work session on HJM 4. Is there any further discussion from the committee? Rep. Matthews.
Madam Chair, would you be prepared to entertain a motion at this time on this bill?
Seeing nobody else in the queue to comment, I would.
Okay. Well, then I would like to make a motion to move the House Joint Measure 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation from our committee.
Thank you. Would the committee assistant call the vote for the vote, please? It has been moved that we move HJM 4 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative
Bell?
Aye.
Representative Cobb?
Aye.
Representative Riley?
Aye.
Representative Weiner?
Excused.
Vice Chair
Freeman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Matthews?
Aye.
Chair Kellen?
Aye. Thank you. HJM passes. We need a carrier representative.
Madam Chair, I would be honored as a veteran and an individual that has had the same problems that these boys face today. I'd be honored to carry that.
Thank you very much, sir. We'll close the work session on HJM 4 and open a work session on HJM 2. Is there any further committee discussion on HJM 2? Let's see if anybody... Anyone want to make a motion? All right.
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair.
I can tell that, and he's really close here.
Well, we just can't make people wait any longer, by going. Yeah. Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that, that this committee would move HJM 2 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Matthews. It has, we have a motion that we move HJM 2 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Could we call for the vote, please?
Representative Boone.
Aye.
Representative Escobar.
Aye.
Representative Cobb.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Weiner.
Excused.
Vice Chair Freeman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Matthews.
Aye.
Chair Kellen.
Aye. Representative Boone, you had some passion around this. Would you like to carry this one?
Actually, I was going to pass my passion to the other veteran on the committee, if he would
so agree.
Absolutely. He would agree. I'd love to carry it.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
I have a lot of passion. I'll wait for
Do we have
one.
Any other veterans that we're going to need to make sure we have covered? Okay, all right. Well, we'll get you. We'll get you. Don't
right.
you worry.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but he had this exciting bill the other day with all of the flash.
Yes, I appreciate it.
Could you...
Before you close this...
I have not done that.
I move that we allow the Representative Weiner to vote on this bill. He was out of the room.
We have motions before us on, at the moment, HJM 2 to move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. How would you like to vote? Thank you. We'll close the work session on HJM 2, reopen the work session on HJM 4. Would you like to vote on that one? It also went forward with a due pass. Thank you. All right. We've got those all technically taken care of, I think. I am going to move now to open a public hearing on HB 2032. We're going to move down to the next one down on the agenda. I want to make sure that we have time to cover this one today. And Mr. Willis, we'll try to get back to 2176.
Problems.
Thank you. Mr. Molina.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2032 provides $1,000 credit against income taxes for provision of pro bono legal services to certain military personnel. Applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2009. Takes effect on 91st day following adjournment seen die. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. This House Bill 2032 comes to us at the request of the House Interim Committee on Veterans Affairs for Velda Rogers. And I would like to hear now from Ms. Rogers. Thank you for being so patient and waiting for us to work our way through here.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, ladies and gentlemen. I am the pardon me, the chairperson for the Military Assistance Panel of the Oregon State Bar, but I am not here on behalf of the bar. I have to say that up front. The Military Assistance Panel drafted this legislation, and we drafted it as a result of a need for additional attorneys on our panel. At this point, we have somewhere between 100 and 150 people who provide pro bono services to people in the military and their families who are on deployment status. Each member of the panel who is assigned a case has to do a minimum of 2 hours pro bono on the case. You have a paper in front of you that has the statistics of the number of cases and the various types of areas since this referral program began in 2004. And to date, we have 320 of those referrals. However, as you are all aware, the 41st Brigade is going to be activated. And that means that there are going to be a whole lot more people who are going into the military and who are going to need assistance. Over the 4 years that this has been in in place, we have had a number of attorneys who have gone above and beyond what you would expect them to do pro bono, because as far as I know, no member of my panel has charged someone for any of the representation that they have done. But they're getting tired, and we're going to have a lot more people coming through who are in need of our assistance. This is a carrot to try to bring people in, additional people. We're also, while we're doing this, attempting to educate the bar in general, the public in general, about the provisions of the Service Member Civil Relief Act, which is where the majority of these cases come from, to try to mitigate the need for additional people. Ultimately, our philosophy is and has been that it is important that the people who are on deployment status should not have to worry about what is going on at home. That's what we're supposed to be here for. And we would ask that you take that into consideration with regard to this bill so that we can hopefully get additional people who would be willing to come forward and help in this very important work. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Rogers?
I have a question. Ms. Rogers, thanks for being here. Thank you, Chair. Mm-hmm. How is it now that your panel reaches out to the military? How do they get their work or offer their services? What's your means of communication there?
Madam Chairman, Representative Matthews, what happens, or the way that it has been funneled to date, is that the requests come through the military department. The military department then works with the Oregon State Bar. The lady whose name appears on this statistical sheet is actually our liaison with the Oregon State Bar, and she gets the information from the military department, and then she will contact individual members of the panel to refer the case specifically to them and make the connection between the service member and the attorney.
Okay.
Good questions? Rep. Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for coming. I have a little bit of a problem with this bill, and that is I've known a fair number of lawyers, and I have yet to meet one who wouldn't do pro bono work in cases that they felt deserve it, and they've been really good for it. You say there's a limited number of lawyers who are participating, and they're getting tired?
Yes, sir.
And how many lawyers are now participating?
Between 100 and 150, statewide.
Statewide. I don't have any further questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that I do have a question, and we'll call up General Caldwell here in a second. So if you feel more comfortable handing off my question, that's okay. And basically it's around numbers and consequently fiscal impact with the increased deployment. I'm interested, because this committee will be charged with looking at the potential fiscal impact for this, I'm wondering if we can get our arms a little bit around some potential number of individuals who might be accessing service and thereby qualifying for this tax credit.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. As was indicated in previous testimony, there's roughly 3,000 Oregon Army National Guard that will deploy in May. We just deployed 150 soldiers with our aviation unit. We probably got, I think the last number I saw was roughly 300 people deployed right now in the Army Guard, and probably about another 40 or 50 in the Air Guard. So we've been consistently averaging, I would say, anywhere between 500 and above of soldiers being deployed pretty much since 2004 timeframe. The BAR has done a superb job in helping out many of the family members who are left back, who end up with a particular problem that's maybe beyond their ability to want, understand, to deal with under the protections that they have under the Relief Act, under the Soldiers Relief Act by Congress. The Oregon legislature has tweaked legislation over the last several years to try to employ those same kind of benefits here in the state of Oregon, but they're mainly dealing with the federal legislation because that's the one that really does protect them. We have found all kinds of different problems thanks to this military assistance panel. We have discovered in many instances where people were being charged over the legal limit for interest. They were being basically usury is the best term, and these pro bono lawyers have stepped in and recovered these people's rights and saved them thousands and thousands of dollars. And these are typically young family members who don't have a lot of life experience, and they don't really know who to turn to. Unfortunately, we're restricted. Our Judge Advocate Corps is basically restricted by federal statute to deal with the soldier and not the family. We're not staffed. We have two lawyers on staff that have to deal with all of the wills and all of the preparation for deployments. We have traditional guardsmen who, about another 8 or 10 lawyers that we have that are traditional guardsmen, but they typically either one deploy or two. They're in a law practice outside the guard, and they drill 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year. So when this was basically, and if I'm correct, and you can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but it was Pete Shepard at the Justice Department that came to me in about 2003 or 4 and said, you know, we've been talking about this in the bar, and we think that this might be something that would be helpful. And we embraced it, and they have been a godsend to us because we've been able to take these young families and particularly spouses and children and get them to some competent legal advice so they can negotiate their situation. The bill specifically speaks to National Guard and Reservists, doesn't include active duty, which I think is the proper thing for the state. If you're on active duty and you're situated at Fort Lewis or some other active duty post, then you have rights as a spouse to go to the JAG Corps and get assistance. We don't in the Guard and Reserve. Sometimes I like to refer to us as the non-union part-time help of the Army. Christmas help, actually. So, and sometimes that's how the laws and the statutes are written at the congressional level, and that prevent these kind of little anomalies. So we're very much in favor of this legislation. There is another bill that's actually, you're going to see, that came out of Judiciary, which is House Bill 2303, I think it is the right number, if I got my sheet right. And it basically allows awarded damages to attorneys who do pick up these SCRA cases. And again, this is more to get particularly credit card companies and auto loan companies and these who have been noted as particularly aggressive and sometimes not real friendly with these young spouses. This gives the attorney a chance to pick up damages that the court in Oregon can award. If that is successful, this will probably see less work on this military assistance panel, would be my guess. We're hoping that the two combined will, one, encourage people to stay in the game, because there's a lot of things that don't necessarily fall under the Servicemen Relief Act. So this would be kind of a backup to this bill if it passes. And we're hoping that 2303 will get through and move through this body and allow that attorney then to say, well, you know, actually I can do this work and I got maybe a payday at the other end. We're not looking for paydays, we're looking to solve problems. And I think in the testimony that happened before judiciary last week, that was the signature moment, I think, by the attorneys that were there. He said, you know, if you got this kind of teeth, then you're going to see a lot of the problems avoided. So once this pro bono attorney picks up the phone and makes that one call and says, have you read Oregon statute that allows me to come after you for treble damages, probably many problems will get solved real quickly that way. And that's what we're hoping. And that's, you know, we're not out to try to drive a stake in anybody's heart, but we're trying to get these young families and their spouses their due, what's coming to them. So, again, we support the bill. I think I have no way of estimating what's going to happen when we put 50% of the Army National Guard on deployment. I think we're going to see some significant issues that we've seen bits and pieces of over the last several years, but now it's going to be compounded just by the sheer number of the people that are deploying.
And the bill you mentioned, 2303, was heard in judiciary?
Yes, ma'am, it was.
Okay,
it was, according to my sheet, it was the 30th, January 30th. I testified in favor of that as well. I just can't remember which one's which, but yeah. And that's a good bill, and I really hope it passes.
Understood.
Madam okay. Chairman, in addition to that, and that bill was ours as well, in addition to that particular provision, we are attempting to educate people so that we don't have these particular problems, and we crafted this particular bill so that it isn't just when you've done your first 2 hours, you get this credit. A lot of the cases that come to the military assistance panel can be resolved within 2 or 3 hours. So we have added additional time, and in order to qualify for this tax credit, you would have to do a minimum of 10 hours per year pro bono. And there are not very many cases that we have seen thus far that have required that many hours. We do not anticipate there is going to be a huge impact. We don't know, because we've never had this type of a situation before.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Matthews?
General Caldwell, this, I guess what comes to my mind is some of these soldiers that are deploying are actually deploying for a second time and possibly a third tour. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so, follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
So I guess the point would be, because in most cases there's not a pay differential between their normal job and what they get when they go on active duty, some of these might already maybe not have fully recovered after their first deployment as they're getting ready for the second. So these services would be very needed for those families in the absence of the loved one as they're protecting their country and freedom, correct?
That is correct. The group that we just put out last week, they deployed on Saturday. There was 154 men and women in that aviation group. Out of the 154, 64 of them had deployed more than once. Out of the 64, 27 had deployed 3 times. And out of that 64, 8 had deployed 4 times. So we're no longer the National Guard of 50 years ago, 40 years ago. We're now an operational force that is plugged and played as necessary on a regular cycle. It was just announced in the media this Monday, I believe, in Eastern Oregon. Most of our Eastern Oregon National Guard, Army National Guard, is part of the 116th Brigade out of Idaho, out of Boise. It's roughly 500-600 soldiers, covers everything from Ontario to Hood River, right up Interstate 84 and then over into Central Oregon as well. They're back in the queue, which we knew was coming. We haven't received any alert orders, but right now they're scheduled for 2010 deployment or early in 2011. So, as you can just see, everybody in the Oregon, every unit in the Oregon National Guard is deployed in this conflict at least once. Now, that'll be their second deployment, 3116. So this is, we don't see relatively end, regardless of what occurs with the new president, the new initiatives that are happening, there's still going to be a demand for soldiers to fill these cycles, and we anticipate being in this business now for a few more years at a minimum.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
I apologize. My dependency on paper isn't always keeping it flowing with me. I see that the estimated fiscal on this is roughly $300,000. And it will have a subsequent, once we work it, we'll have a subsequent referral to revenue to talk about that further. Reverend Biggs, did you want to comment on this one?
Please.
All righty. I think I'm straight now on my list. I got confused, and I apologize for that.
Is this being recorded? Do I have to say so much in the beginning?
It is being recorded that you need to at least put your name on the tape again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm retired Korean War Chaplain Reverend Robert Biggs, and I'm also a citizen lobbyist and a very active veteran and Grange member, and also I know what I'm talking about on this subject. I roam the streets. I find the men and women who are homeless. I take them out from underneath the bridge to get them help. And I know those veterans seriously need legal assistance, and it's just not possible for them to even know how to go about to get it. Or they are so drunk or so mentally disturbed they can't function. It's a sad situation. During a liver transplant period, which I had from the Korean War injury, I spent a number of years in Portland. During my recuperation, I joined with the priests and other ministers to do the walk of the streets. And believe me, the stories I found were just absolutely incredible. But the positive thing about it, we got help. We went and begged of a different attorney, and I do know there are those helps, but they can't do it all. We went to the various ministers and asked them to go to find ways to see what they could do. But the work is overburdened. Right now I have three different cases that Don Boyd and I, as the Veteran Action Committee, were working on, and they're doing very well. They got their operations, they got off of their booze, they've got medical help for their post-trauma, and they are working, and they're eligible under this new proposed wonderful legislation to have that legal assistance if it becomes necessary. Those men, each of them, needed legal assistance. We had a deuce of a time of finding maybe somebody that would be able to help them. Our congressmen of this state, we worked with every one of them. They've done a wonderful job about helping them get the benefits that they didn't know how to go about doing without that help. But the legal things, of course, are needed under this bill, as I understand that it would be able to help to do it. I can't give the statistics yet because I have been a little bit disabled and haven't got up to speed on all this, but I do know from my general experience working with various issues that over 50% of the population of veterans are homeless for our last number of conflicts that we've had. And believe me, with this, as the general did remind us, with what's happening, as we all know what's going to be going on, it's going to be worse, as our president has said, we're going to more need this type of assistance. I think it is there's something that has to be put into the budget, even though we've got a big budget to cover so very many things. And those homeless and those veterans that are in Ascapati don't have that group and organization that other speakers have talked about. There's no one to represent them. Luckily, we find a few of them in our action committee. And many other little groups have done the same thing, and we work with them, hoping that we can reach out to give
them a direction and a voice, because they're out there floating around. I think you all, being very sophisticated, educated, leadership people, can understand what I'm talking about. I thank you so very, very much for hearing this. Please do what you can to pass this, and let's push this on through the Senate and on to our new good president and that wonderful administration we now have. Thank you very much. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions? Thank you, sir, for coming today, and we appreciate the work that you're doing on behalf of our veterans.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all for what you're doing, too. God bless.
Okay. I don't see anyone else. I will close today's public hearing on House Bill 2032. We'll get just a little more information and see what we can do with it. Thank you. Let me go ahead now and open a public hearing on House Bill 2176 and at least sort of get things on the record. I don't think we had anything else.
No.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, professional staff, for the record, my name is Jim Willis, and I'm Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2176, which is an agency housekeeping bill drafted to make minor adjustments to the eligibility requirements for those seeking an appointment to the Governor's Veterans Advisory Committee, Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee. The Advisory Committee works with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs in an advisory capacity and consists of 9 members chosen from throughout the state, and I would add that they work on staggered 4-year terms of appointment. They are eligible to seek appointment to a second term, and many often do, serving a full 8 years. Under the current statute covering these appointments, ORS 406-210, the governor will appoint 9 members, all of whom are war veterans, as defined by statute. And the governor appoints, these appointments shall represent each war era, with one at least from the Korean conflict, and at least 3 members shall be of the period following the Korean conflict. The situation with these appointments are simply this. We need to take the word war veteran out of this statute, because we have a number of highly qualified people who could serve on this committee who did not serve during a war era. And sometimes they're called Cold War veterans. In other times, they were simply caught, as an example, from 1955 to 1961, so the tail end of the Korean War and the beginning of the Vietnam War. Those people who serve very honorably in Europe or South America or in the eastern part of our hemisphere simply wouldn't be eligible to serve. That's not right, and it denies a whole generation of men and women veterans an ability to even apply for the position. So that's why we want to remove the word war veteran. And we also want to have the committee know that we honor all eras of veterans. And not only World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf, of course, Grenada, Panama, Bosnia, Kosovo, Slovakia. I mean, we could just go on and on. We've even had American troops still serving in the Sinai Desert, as an example. So we think this is a minor modification to the eligibility requirements. It will give the governor and our department more flexibility in creating an advisory committee that can address the issues facing the department today and into the future. And I'm happy to tell you that we have on the department today women veterans serving, on this advisory committee, women veterans serving. We have persons representing other cultural interests that serve on the advisory committee, and we have perhaps one of the youngest advisory committee members ever to serve, who I think is now a whole 25 years old, a sergeant from the Oregon Guard who's now discharged and served in Iraq. So we go all the way, the whole gamut, from the clear back to the World War II generation to Iraq. But we want to have the flexibility to, when these various terms expire, to pick the best people. And the other thing that I want to represent to this committee, so you'll understand, is that we want to make sure the committee is geographically representing our state, that they all just don't come from the I-5 corridor. So they come from Burns, and they come from Coos Bay, North Bend. They come from Woodburn, and they come from Bend, and so on. So we've got Eastern Central Coast, the corridor, and I think the furthest one south on the corridor is from Roseburg. It's a woman Marine veteran who serves on our committee. We also do not meet in Salem all the time. At least one of those quarterly meetings has to be in the field, and we go to the coast, we go to Central Oregon, we go to the high desert country, far eastern part of the state. In fact, our June meeting will be in Astoria. And these are meetings where the veterans in those areas have asked us to come, and they host the meeting, and it's all recorded, and we take comments from veterans in that area. And if I can, in the next biennium, my intent is to move two of those meetings to the field. So only two will be in Salem, and two will be in the field where we can serve our veterans better. So that's my testimony on this housekeeping bill, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Representative Wiener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim, just one quick question. I don't have a problem removing the word war, but I'm just wondering if there's going to be action taken to make sure we always have a war veteran on there that understands what it is to come back from combat and go through those issues, because I can see us losing that really fast. And if you haven't been there, how can you make decisions on the guys that are returning if we go to another war situation?
Well, Representative Wiedner and Chair Cowan, of course, as you know, the department was formed in 1945 at the end of World War II. I cannot tell you of a single time in looking at the history of the department, and I've looked at it since the day it was formed, when there was not a war veteran serving on this advisory committee, from 1945 to now. And I can't speak for what might happen in the future, but here's this department 64 years old. They've only had 8 directors in 64 years. That's a pretty good record. Of course, a couple of them served over 20 years, which is kind of neat, I guess. But I can assure you I will always have war veterans on this committee, because we have to hear from them for the exact reasons that you just said. And that's the reason we asked this young man from Iraq to serve, because he represents the men and women from all branches that served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we need that perspective that we can't get from my generation, the Vietnam vets. I wasn't there. I don't know what's happening over there. So your comment is well taken, and believe me, we'll keep war veterans on there. But we need that other expertise that's out there, and I feel it's unfair to deny the folks who would have served in a war had they served during that time in American history. They simply didn't. And right now they're being denied the ability to serve, and I don't think that's right.
Any other questions? Is the committee relatively comfortable with this bill? I think we won't go to work session today, but we will move this one fairly quickly then.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that.
With that, I will close the public hearing on 2176. Are there any other items for the good of the order? We are adjourned. Thank you.
Great job.